continue with the conference. Our next speaker is probably the most famous person to speak here today. An English blogger, a YouTube video maker, and well-known alt-right figure, Millennial Wolves, who will speak on the passion of Jordan Peterson.
Okay, right, well, first I'd like to thank Ruben for organising this conference. I think that conferences are very important and very enjoyable for everyone. I think that each one feels like a step forward, so I think it's a very valuable thing. Also, before I start with what might seem like an attack on Jordan Peterson, I want to say that I do think that he does good work. I do think that he is valuable. And I don't dislike him, but he does annoy me because he specifically attacks the alt-right and identitarianism when he doesn't need to. He makes unfair critiques of us as well. And if he's going to criticize us, I'd rather he was fair about it. But he doesn't need to do this at all. So therefore, I feel there's a need to defend ourselves against what he says. And really, he is an individualist. That's part of his big thing. And there are other individualists who I will mention in this speech. Are you all familiar with Sargon of Akkad? Good. I will briefly mention him, just to bring, again, it's not personal, just want to bring in the ideas that are being shared nowadays on YouTube, because YouTube has become a huge arena for discussion, especially in the last few months with the internet blood sports. So, okay, Jordan Peterson was recently interviewed by Vice News. I think some of you will have seen that clip. It was a Chinese Vice journalist, although I'm not sure if that's actually relevant because the white ones are just as anti-white. And the Vice journalist said to him, "One of the things you've talked about, a lot of times you talk to these young men who are flirting with far-right ideologies, and you try and bring them back. What is that process like? How do you bring someone back from the far right?" And Jordan Peterson replies, "Tell them a better story." The journalist asks, "What is the better story?" And Peterson replies, "Grow the hell up. Take your place in the world. You've got something to contribute. Make a plan. Live as an individual. Stay away from the identity politics pathology. It's just an excuse for failing to live your life in a respectable and noble manner." That's a way better story than "go wave your idiot far-right flag at some rally with some pasty-faced morons." What kind of pathetic behaviour is that? "So it's time to grow the hell up." And that was Jordan Peterson's most recent comment on the alt-right and identitarianism. And I'll deal with the meat of what he said later. For now, I want to comment on two things about that interview. It was filmed in Peterson's home, and he is surrounded by First Nations paraphernalia. This is Aboriginal culture of Canada. And First Nations culture, he's into this. I think he's been inducted into some kind of tribe. And First Nations culture is diverse, belonging to a multitude of peoples. I think it's something like, it's over 600 different tribes. But it belongs to a collective. And each one of these individual cultures belongs to a collective, that tribe. And is, in its nature, very collectivist, far more collectivist than Anglo culture. So why is it not enough for Peterson to just, as he preaches, live as an individual? Why attach himself to a culture in this way, let alone a very foreign culture to himself? And would he tell a Canadian Aborigine to not care about his ethnic group, to just live as an individual? Why does he need to do that? And, well, would he say that to one of these people? I suspect not. And as for attaching himself, I mean, I'm not against the idea of a Western man finding some sort of truth in a, what we might call, primitive tribe culture. I can understand it. But even then, that culture belongs to a collective. It is the expression of that collective. And that culture could not exist without that collective. So you have to respect collectives in order to have the cultures, in order that those cultures survive at all. It's not something that you can just plug in and out of. If we all did that, these cultures would simply cease to exist. But the main thing is, would he tell one of these Aborigines, don't get into this identity politics pathology. Don't care about your tribe's existence. That's insane. And of course he wouldn't. And then the other thing I would say about this interview with Vice is that the Vice journalist was trying to catch Peterson out every step of the way, not interviewing him in good faith. And afterwards, Vice edited the footage in an attempt to make Peterson look bad. So all his cucking got him nowhere with the egalitarians. As a centrist, he said things that he thought they, as egalitarians, would agree with. He was trying to be reasonable. In response, they did what they could to make him look stupid. Now, he's a centrist. Now, we are heading, I believe, towards a political arena that includes three categories of players. One, collectivist anti-whites. Two, individualist whites. And three, collectivist whites. That's us. So you've got one, collectivist anti-whites, that's Vice in this case. Two, the individualist whites, that's Peterson. And three, the collectivist whites, alt-right and identitarians. Eric Hoffer, in The True Believer, wrote, it's a famous quote, "The game of history is usually played by the best and the worst over the heads of the majority in the middle, who don't really understand what's going on. They're just buffeted around." Well, I would say, I predict, that the game of the 21st century will be played by ethnic collectivists and egalitarian collectivists over the heads of the individualists in the middle. And Peterson cucking to Vice and then them betraying him anyway is an example of this. He doesn't really fully understand what's going on. He understands the surface of it, but not how deep and profound it is, and how immovable it is. These people are going to exist despite everything he says. Now, as collectivist whites, and when I use the word collectivist, there should always be some nuance about this. Collectivist is a loaded term, makes you sound like you want the Borg collective. I don't. But I do believe in group identity, peoplehood. So, that caveat out of the way. As collectivist whites, we want to gain as many people from the other two groups as possible. Waking up collectivist anti-whites is one thing. They reject hierarchy and are fundamentally nihilistic, but they do accept the reality of groups, peoples. Waking up individualist whites is quite another thing. They don't truly accept hierarchy, I don't think. I'll get into why that is later on. They are fundamentally nihilistic as a result of that rejection of hierarchy. And they vehemently reject the reality of groups. They are blind to something, and they think they are clever and moral for being blind to that thing. And with this blindness, individualist whites aid the anti-whites by negating white identity, while they, the anti-whites, also negate white identity and promote non-white identities. the individualist whites are in some ways opposed to the mainstream, but their individualism is shared by the mainstream. Indeed, it is the standard today. It's so predictable, it's depressing how often you see this attitude of, well, nihilism, atomization. A few weeks ago, I discovered a YouTube series, The Ethnic Origins of Beauty. And you see all these, the thumbnails are all pretty girls from different parts of the world. And I thought, this is a bit strange. This is going to be about how genetics matter because they affect your physical presence, your physical reality. And actually, it wasn't really about that. It was, it was something different. They interviewed, each video was a different girl from somewhere. And they asked her about her identity. And I'm going to talk about two different girls, a Jewish girl and a German girl. And those are the only two that I watched. I haven't really... It might seem like a deliberate choice, but it actually wasn't. I watched the Jewish one first because I thought, oh, here we go. Here's what the Jewish girl said. It was really about their ethnic identity and their feelings about it and what they think it is, all that. So the Jewish girl said, her pride in being Jewish was very powerful and very defined. She could say, here's what it is to be Jewish. I mean, there was no question about it that this is Jewish, this is Jewish, this is Jewish, and so on. And she said, this is it. This is really striking. She said that a major part of being Jewish is being aware of the persecution that Jews have suffered in the past. She also says that she wants to build a life of her own, but it's important to her that she has children, because without continuing her people, her own life becomes meaningless. She said something like, no matter what you do, if you don't continue the people, it all becomes meaningless. Now, contrast that with the German girl. She says that being German really just comprised... I mean, they asked her, what is a German like? She couldn't really say, but she said punctuality. And then she talked about some custom, some day that they have once a year. It was quaint, it was kind of silly, from our 21st century point of view, it was just something a bit fun. But not very meaningful, because we've been divorced from any meaning in it. So for her, being German really just comprised some trivial characteristics and a few silly customs. She does say that she felt pride when Germany won the World Cup, or did well in the World, I can't remember the details, did well in some football event. But that was the only time that she mentioned ethnic pride. And it was very timid. She almost felt embarrassed that she felt some pride. And she said, to contrast with the Jewish girl, this girl said that a major part of being German is being aware of their xenophobic past, which she regretted, was ashamed of, and hates to think about. I mean, already you've got a vast difference here between the two identities. She doesn't even mention having children, as far as I can recall. And indeed, if she ever does have children, it could be with anyone, German or otherwise. You don't get any sense that she wants to continue the German people. She's at best ambivalent about that. She just happens to be German. That's it. So comparing the different attitudes towards peoplehood of the Jewish girl and the German girl, which group is going to be extinct 500 years from now, if you had to guess? And which group will be exploited 5 years from now? And which group is begging to be abused 5 seconds from now? It's not the Jews. And as for which group will still survive in 500 years, obviously, the Jews will, and on current trends, the Germans will not. It's clear as day. The Jewish girl is bulletproofed against nihilism. She'll always have something to do, something to believe in, something to fight for, something to live and die for. She does not follow Jordan Peterson's advice and merely live as an individual. She is connected to the past and the future, and it makes her strong here and now. By contrast, the German girl does live by Peterson's advice. She's an atomized individual. She's just drifting, trying things out, having fun, but not really. Now, our enemies simultaneously claim that we needn't worry about protecting the white race. And by the way, when I say the white race, that's a synonym for the Estonian people, the Lithuanian people, and everyone else. I hope you are aware of that. So our enemies claim at the same time that we needn't worry about protecting the white race because it is not in danger of going extinct. And that the white race is going extinct. And that this is a good thing that we should celebrate. And they never seem bothered by that contradiction, by the way. Anyway, the only concern that they will listen to relates to economics and infrastructure. The white race is heading towards the historical meat grinder. And the only objection we're allowed to raise is the economic impact that our disappearance will have. That is shocking and should be infuriating for everyone. And the thing is that this objection about economics and infrastructure, logistics, that objection is easily neutralized with claims from some think tank that the economy benefits from non-white immigration, and claims from some sociologist that non-white kids do just as well at school as the white kids do, and claims from some university that their black students are just as good at STEM subjects as their white students are, and claims from some meritocrat that East Asians are more intelligent than us, and therefore better for our economy than we are. And so, white man, there is no need for you. Don't be so self-absorbed. The planet will be just fine without you. There is no reason for you to request safety, except your own selfishness. Your white identity, culture, spirit, and genetics are at worst evil, racist, and destructive, and at best, unimportant. The non-whites don't need you. Your politicians don't need you. The world doesn't need you. The economy doesn't need you. The infrastructure of your society doesn't need you. Your culture, which is rubbish, also doesn't need you. History doesn't need you. And the future won't miss you. Now, the individualists, that's the anti-white message, but also the mainstream message. The individualists object to this antagonism towards white people, the white race. Yet they themselves are antagonistic towards the idea of white identity. They tell the bully not to bully, but they refuse to tell the victim of bullying what he needs to hear. Now, I don't like characterizing us as victims of bullying because that puts us in a submissive position, but at the same time, we clearly are being bullied. So let's go with that for now and examine why somebody gets bullied on the individual level. When somebody gets bullied, it tends to be for one of three reasons. just random chance, he is defective in some way, or he is special in some way. And if he gets bullied because he's special in some way, he will become convinced that the thing about him which is special is actually a defect, because it's bringing him this misery. Well, the white race is not being bullied because of random chance, nor because being white is a defect. It is happening because being white is a special thing, a source of unique strength, intelligence, creativity, beauty, endurance, and compassion. That is the animal that we are. But the individualist refuses to say that to white people. And that is grotesque, because it is dishonest, and because it doesn't protect the victim of bullying against future bullying. Indeed, it sets him up to resent those aspects of himself which attracted the bully's attention. So being white will not be a source of strength in his eyes, but of weakness, dishonesty, selfishness, destructiveness, and hatred. This leaves him vulnerable and running on fumes and self-delusion. The self-delusion wrought by individualism in this racial context is threefold. One, that the white man can survive without his people. He cannot. Two, that if white people don't care about their racial identity, then everybody else will stop caring about theirs. They will not. Three, that all anybody needs is freedom. Freedom from tradition. Freedom from the state. Freedom from group identity. Freedom from lack of choice. Freedom from nation, from folk, from religion, freedom from anything that he did not himself create, and freedom from hierarchy that he has not personally chosen to submit to. There is nothing greater than himself. The individualist white man, who refuses to care about the story of which he is a part, is a disembodied atom, playing tourist in the universe of things, unable to see that each and every one of those things has meaning, whether he likes it or not. Now, in an online conversation with the noted YouTube individualist Sargon of Akkad, I said to him, "You've agreed that East Asians and Ashkenazi Jews are going to outcompete whites at the higher levels of our society, and that blacks, Hispanics, and Muslims are going to outnumber us in our societies. So we are going to be outnumbered and outcompeted in our own societies. Why don't you care about what happens to us?" And he replied, "Because I don't recognize an us." Now, in America, Hispanics have always voted in larger numbers for the Democrats than the Republicans. It's usually about 2/3 to the Democrats. They are more anti-free speech, more anti-gun rights, more pro-welfare than whites. And they are poised to become the dominant ethnic group in America. White Americans will be outvoted on every issue and at every election. But of course, as white people, there is no us. So there's nothing to protect. Nothing's being lost. Nothing to worry about. In Germany, 76% of Turks vote for either the Social Democrats or the Green Party, and only 6% vote for the conservative CDU party. But they are also eligible to vote in Turkish elections, and 63% of them. These are far-left parties that they vote for in Germany. But in the Turkish elections, 63% of them voted to make Turkey more hard-right and autocratic in last year's referendum for Erdogan. So they'll vote hard-left in Germany until the Germans are overpowered, whether demographically or legislatively, and then they'll turn hard-right, as in their own country. They will do whatever is good for them as a group, and that is bad for the Germans. But of course, as white people, there is no us. In the Netherlands, it's a similar story. Turks voted, there's a Turkish population in the Netherlands, and 71% of them voted for Erdogan's option in the referendum last year. 71% of them. And at the time, Erdogan was talking about waging a holy war against the Netherlands. But then when it comes to elections inside the Netherlands, Turks vote for either hard-left parties or their own identitarian party, DENK. So they do whatever is good for them as a group. The pattern appears again, and it will not be good for the native Dutch. But then, as white people, there is no us. Finally, in Britain, I couldn't believe this statistic. It's what I found last night. Don't quote me on it, but it's what I found. 85% of Muslims in Britain voted Labour in last year's general election. 85%. Yet, what liberal or Labour-esque policies do we see in Pakistan? Not many. So, these people will vote Labour in Britain until the British are overpowered. And then they'll turn hard right. And it'll be their own version of hard right. It won't be our version of hard right. So they will do whatever is good for them as a group, and that is bad for the native Brits. But of course, as white people, there is no us. Now, another thing that Sargon of Akkad said to me was that it isn't the white race that is under attack today, but whiteness or white hegemony. And this is a good way for someone like him to sidestep the whole racial issue. And you can moan about SJWs without actually ever admitting, yeah, this is a racial battle going on here. But the thing is, if this attack on us were not racial, then people in general would know about the Arab slave trade. You go on and on about the Atlantic slave trade. No one knows about the Arab slave trade. People in general would also know about the brutal racism that exists all over the non-white world. We are the least racist. And people would know about mass black fatherlessness and the violence endemic among black communities all over the world, and the toxic masculinity promoted by Islam. And I use that term ironically. And the appalling treatment of whites in South Africa. And of course, people would know about the Holodomor. But people are not told about these things, because even though these things are awful, they can't be used to discredit the white race. So let us be clear. The object of attack in this culture war is not our culture, nor our foreign policy, nor our economic system, nor our toxic masculinity. It's us, our spirit, and the DNA that conveys it through time. And these other things are used against us: our privilege, our colonial history, our recent actions in the Middle East, the non-existent pay gap, anything at all. But they are just tools being employed in an attack that has a much broader and more primal basis: race. So let's look at what our current politicians are doing about this, and I'm talking about politicians in Western Europe specifically. They pander to the anti-whites, the anti-white collectivists. But mostly they're with the individualists, I think. You could argue about that, but I think that's basically the truth. Now, they don't care about race because they want racial diversity. They claim it's all about culture. But then they don't care about culture either because they want multiculturalism, which brings with it an array of dangers to any culture. So they don't care about culture. They also don't care about nationhood because most of them are doing what they can to sell us all out to the European Union. And they certainly don't care about religion. So that leaves only economics. For our politicians, the only thing that matters is economics. That's their only reality, I think, from day to day. Their only interest in us, their only conception of us, is as economic units. Now, contrast that with the society of Wakanda, dreamed up by Jewish writers, depicted in the Black Panther movie by a mostly white crew, it must be said, and hysterically celebrated by anti-whites all over the West. Wakanda, and the first thing to say about Wakanda is that it has a wall.
Walls work.
Yeah, the Wakandans think so. And no one's calling them racist for that. So, its people, the people of Wakanda, believe in cultural insulation. They're not interested in being enriched. They are anti-refugee, because they realize that bringing in other people tends to damage your own people. And they're obsessed with ancestor worship, because they see it as a source of identity, which in turn is a great source of spiritual strength. And they are explicitly concerned with racial preservation. So they're not interested in the many health benefits of being mixed race. The many supposed health benefits, I should say, of being mixed race. And furthermore, they value their ethnic group in and of itself as something that is intrinsically meaningful and precious. So, I mean, we could go into the whole thing about how liberals just love this, and it's bizarre because when the same things appear in white people, liberals go crazy, but that's another matter. What did the Wakandans see that the white individualist is blind to? Earlier, I said that one of the individualist's delusions is that he can survive without his people. This is so simple it's embarrassing that it needs to be said at all. But here it is. As a white man, you cannot survive without the white race. In two ways. One, your culture, and probably everything that you value in life, depends on the white race. Whether it's politics, infrastructure, education, policing, prosperity, or indeed respect for the individual and belief in the individual. You have, as an individualist, you have absolutely no reason to believe that non-white peoples will preserve these things. None whatsoever. And then two, the other way in which you can't survive without the white race. The white race is under attack, and that means that you, as a white person, are under attack. It also means that your children and grandchildren are under attack. Now, before they are even born, and in the future, after you are gone. So it's time to start thinking beyond your own lifespan. This is something that, bizarrely, I think a lot of very intelligent individualists don't get. They don't understand that that it really is the noble, honorable thing to think about 100 years, 500 years, and even 1,000 years into the future. Now, when the great replacement of Europeans began back in the late 1940s, in Britain at least, our ancestors did think beyond their own lifespan. But they were beaten down. They were called racist and all the rest of it. And then their children, the baby boomers, were conditioned into universalism. On the one hand, the baby boomers lived as people have always lived. Birds of a feather flocking together. But at the political level, they thought only of the next 5 years and didn't really raise much objection to the mass immigration, which increased with every election. And they did this, they thought in short-term ways, in election after election, caring about their kids in the short term, but not protecting them in the long term, and not even thinking about the fate of their grandchildren. Well, now those grandchildren are here, and they are adolescents. They are old enough to be thinking for themselves. Now, here are some stories that I have received recently from fans, and also one that I've got on Twitter, in America. There was a thing passed around about a high school teacher saying how alarmed she was by the rise in alt-right attitudes among her students just in the last few years, the last 2 years. She said there was a big difference between how they were in 2015 and how they are now. That's incredible, but believable because of the progress that we've been making online. And she, as a liberal, didn't know what to do about it, didn't know what to think. And then another, this is an anecdote from Australia. A fan of mine told me that he has on several occasions caught his students, in high school class, he's caught the students listening to alt-right podcasts and videos, one of which was mine. I was flattered to know, but also TRS and that kind of stuff. And that's apparently he said it happened 6 or 7 times. I mean, that's unthinkable. But when I was at school, that is absolutely unthinkable. And in Britain, I heard about a student who went to university, I won't say where, and he found, within a few weeks, he found other identitarians at that university. And they're now a group of friends. And then I heard about the same thing happening at a university in a different part of England. I suspect it's typical now. And wherever you go to university, you will be able to find other people who are into this stuff. And just a few years ago, that would have been unthinkable. And in Germany, a new generation is emerging for whom the story of Germany's evil past is outweighed by their own dispossession in the present day, because they are feeling it. It's there, it's right in front of them. The 3/4 of the kids in their class are brown. It's just undeniable. So young white people all over the West can see their minority status and eventual extinction appearing on the horizon. And so the comfort that allowed liberal delusions, including autistic individualism, to flourish is now dissipating. That comfort is going year by year. In summary, the short-term thinking and the universalism of our parents and grandparents are bearing fruit. And that fruit is identitarian, alt-right, nationalist attitudes among the young. Now, our enemies get more scared about this all the time. They're constantly going on about the threat of nationalism, rising nationalism in Europe. And this is not just because of the rare signs of tangible progress that nationalism has made in Europe. It's because they know that those rare signs are just the start. They know that the process, which has been planned for quite a while, to quote that recent leaked video from the, I think it was the SPLC or the ADL. They know that the process, which has been in motion for a long time, is now far enough along that we, white people, are bound to start noticing it en masse. But our enemies are in a tough position. If they talk about us, they draw people's attention to our ideas. But if they don't talk about us, then they can't tell people what to think about our ideas. So, as for the online individualists, they are being left behind. Some of you will be aware of the Crichton Tea debacle from last year, but it really affects that entire community known as the skeptics, who are hardcore individual, or well, they think of themselves as hardcore individualists. That entire community has now been discredited and is running on fumes. And all they can do, well, so many of their fans join the alt-right. All these people can do is ask stupid questions, fatuous questions. How are you going to form an ethno-state? That's irrelevant. That's something for the future. It is not, it's something that we can be thinking about and talking about and planning, and we should be. But it does not, it's not crucial, it's not key to our concerns. Our concerns are real, whether or not we know how we're going to form an ethno-state, whether or not we know what the culture, the fashions and so on are going to be like in your ethno-state. And that's another question they ask us. What's the culture, what's the economic system going to be like? Irrelevant. Doesn't matter. And then they'll say, another stupid question is, well, what is white anyway? They join the SJWs in asking that. But that question, what is white anyway, is really a question born of a willingness to waste time. Because we all know what white is. Everyone does. And then the other question is, well, why do you care about your race anyway? Is it because you're not accomplished as an individual? Which fatuous remark brings us back to Jordan Peterson and his message to young men flirting with far-right ideology. And now I'll go through each of the things he said. Grow the hell up. Yes, the modern world bathes us in delusion, and each of us needs to break out of that. Each of us needs to put away childish things and grow up. I think we can all agree with Jordan Peterson on that. Take your place in the world, he said. Yes, each one of us should find his place in the world. And that is a daunting task for a lot of young people, especially young men. It's a reality. You've got something to contribute. Yes, almost certainly you have. Make a plan. Yes. Think ahead and know what you're aiming towards. But then we get to the crux of the matter. Live as an individual. Yes and no. The fact is, as I said earlier, Peterson himself does not live only as an individual. He was produced by Northern European genetics and shaped by Canadian culture, and he thrives today within the culture of white people, especially Anglo and Germanics, I would say. But because modernity has ripped the soul out of that culture, white Western civilization, he has adopted the culture of another people, the First Nations culture. And I would say this is his middle-class search for authenticity, by the way. If his own people, though, hadn't been systematically degraded as a collective, then I suspect that Peterson wouldn't feel the need to co-opt the culture of another collective. So no, he does not live purely as an individual, and it is hypocritical for him to give that advice to young men. The next thing he said was, stay away from the identity politics pathology. No. is what he's saying there is, stay away from the most successful survival strategy known. That's crazy. Stay away from love of your people, the most natural drive in the world. That's absurd and dishonest. I think he's a liar there. I think he's breaking one of his rules and he's being dishonest even with himself. Then he goes on, the identity politics pathology, and just to talk about that as pathologizing love of your own people, that's just crazy. But anyway, he says it's just an excuse for failing to live your life in a respectable and noble manner. Well, is it respectable or noble to feel nothing for the people who created you, the people whom you represent as an individual? Is it respectable or noble to not care whether they continue to exist or become a despised minority in their own homelands? How is it respectable or noble to be ambivalent about that? I'd say it's treacherous and cowardly, and also egomaniacal, to think that you are so important that your people, doesn't matter whether they live or die, whether they flourish or go extinct, because that is that's what's at stake here. And then he also says, that's a way living as an, that's a way better story than go wave your idiot far-right flag at some rally with some pasty-faced morons. What kind of pathetic behavior is that? Now, I will grant that some of us are pasty-faced, but I don't think that many of us are morons. I think that's rather unfair and rash of Peterson to say that. But he is alluding to a phenomenon which does crop up among us from time to time. A failed or unaccomplished individual can wish to be subsumed into a collective so as to suppress his sense of failure, that he hasn't done much with his life, or he doesn't know what to do with his life. That is a real thing. It does happen. But it does not discredit the cause or falsify the claims that we make about the danger that Europeans are in. We need to become accomplished individuals and care about our peoples and protect them. And then finally, Dr. Peterson said, so it's time to grow the hell up. Well, yes, Dr. Peterson, it is. It is time that pampered, deluded white people grow the hell up and realize that the comforts they enjoy, the certainties they are soothed by, the cultures they value, the values they value, depend on the white race. No other race has proven itself capable of sustaining these things or demonstrated itself interested in protecting them. So yes, grow the hell up and realize that we are in a fight for Western civilization and for the existence of the gene pool and the spirit that sustain Western civilization. Yes, grow the hell up and realize that you are not the center of the universe. And as much as you are an individual, you are a representative of a people. And you have obligations towards that people that only a petulant child would deny. In summary, Jordan Peterson's individualism is obviously insufficient. What is the point of cleaning your room when your country is doomed? And I'm not saying that that's an excuse not to clean your room and therefore you should just neglect these things in your own life. But I am saying it's pointless to do that thinking that it will just solve everything when there's a much bigger problem outside your house. In every other town and city in your country, in every other country in your civilization. And also, how can you have a fulfilling life if you have betrayed your ancestors and your descendants and let your people be dispossessed? How can you have a fulfilling life looking back and thinking, oh yeah, I was a traitor. I was a coward. I didn't care. I didn't fight. I knew it, but I didn't say it. Richard Spencer said a few months ago that ethno-nationalism is an idea whose time has come, and that you can't stop an idea whose time has come. And I agree with that. No matter what we do in the alt-right or identitarian circles, no matter what we do, we gain numbers. It's almost like we have a Midas touch at the moment. The public in general, especially the young, are ready for what we need to tell them. The 21st century is our time. As an ethno-nationalist, this is your time. You are an individual, and you should become accomplished. You should not take a coward's refuge in identitarianism, but neither should you take a coward's refuge in individualism. You should value your capacities as an individual, and you should hone them and become the best that you can be. But you should also honour your people and understand that they are in danger and that you have an obligation to defend them. Be careful, but be unashamed. Say the things that your generation are ready to hear. Speak the truths that you know. Care about yourself. Care about your nation. Care about your race. Be yourself. Be an Estonian. And be a European. For you are all of these things. Thank you.